Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.
Hey guys, time for a very special announcement. I'm very excited to introduce you all to Howl.fm. This is the best and most convenient way to listen to all episodes of Happy, Sad, Confused. It's on the web at howl.fm and on the go with the brand new Howl app. You can stream and download all Happy, Sad, Confused episodes that have been released in the past 6 months with this, guys. And you can go beyond just the shows with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and much more. Plus, if you want to upgrade to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month, you'll get exclusive access to the entire Happy, Sad, Confused archive, every single episode going all the way back, and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than six months. All have been remastered, no ads on any of them. Plus, only with Howl Premium, you can listen to hundreds of hours of WTF with Marc Maron, the gold standard guys, right? You can hear all the classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., and so much more. Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals, brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You really need to check it out. Check out great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. Already, there are 10 brand new hilarious Howl Originals, and they are adding new shows every week. So get access to all this exclusive content, both on your phone and on your desktop, with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code HAPPY, you get a full month of a free trial. So go to howl.fm, enter the code HAPPY at checkout, and you're off and running. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on the howl.fm website. Go to howl.fm, that's howl.fm. And use the promo code HAPPY for 1 month free trial of Premium. Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I am Josh Horowitz, and this is my voice. This is my podcast. I just tried to make it sound a little bit more exciting and momentous than it is. It's just a weekly podcast, guys. It's just an interview. It's just me talking to somebody cool and important, if you're into movies and TV. That's important, right? It is to me. Thanks for tuning in, as always, guys. Welcome back to the show. Another great guest this week on Happy, Sad, Confused, in the person of Andrew Garfield. Andrew Garfield, of course, the most well-known for the two amazing Spider-Man films, The Social Network, and now starring in a tremendous new movie called 99 Homes. This is kind of a sneak peek because 99 Homes actually doesn't open until, I believe, September 25th. So this is just an amuse-bouche before the main event, before getting to enjoy the film in theaters, as you should. I really did enjoy this one. This is it's kind of a two-hander. It's Andrew and the epicness that is Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon, for me, is, I think he's just about my favorite actor working on the planet today. You just might be hearing him on this podcast very soon. But enough about Michael Shannon. Andrew Garfield is the guy this week. We talk about a lot in this episode. In my experience with Andrew, It's interesting because I was saying to people before the interview, I wasn't sure which Andrew I was going to get because I've spoken to him where he's very kind of in serious, super actory mode. And I've also spoken to him when he's kind of silly. And I think happily for this conversation, because we had some time to really go into a lot of different areas, you're going to see both sides of him in this conversation. It's a thoughtful conversation, given that 99 Homes is about some weighty issues. It sounds... To describe it is maybe not selling it as well as it should be, but here's the thumbnail. It's basically a thriller set during the housing collapse of a few years back. And Andrew plays a guy kicked out of his home alongside his mother and his son. And he's forced to kind of make a deal with the devil to turn his life around, to get to pay for, you know, the necessities of life. And that's when Michael Shannon comes into the picture in a very charismatic, seductive kind of role. It's a great two-hander, and it's fun to see Andrew in something where he's not required to put on tights. Spider-Man films there's so much extreme opinion about those films when I think the reality is somewhere in between. And I think Andrew would probably agree with me on this, you know, they're flawed films, but I think I will stand behind them and say that there is stuff to enjoy in them. And that includes Andrew's performance and his chemistry clearly with Emma Stone. That will hold up, I think, on repeated viewings, even if some of the other stuff didn't work. But Andrew's a good guy. He's a really talented actor, and he's already completed work on the new Martin Scorsese film Silence. He's one of the leads in that. He's quickly put together an impressive resume, which also includes time on the stage. I got a chance to see him a few years back in Death of a Salesman, which was a really moving piece of work, and we briefly touched on it in the conversation because it co-starred, really starred Philip Seymour Hoffman in the main performance and directed by Mike Nichols, which obviously lends that production a certain weight. So anyway, it was cool to talk to Andrew, and I think you're going to really dig this conversation from a smart, thoughtful young actor with a great future ahead of him and some great work already behind him. What else to mention? As I tape this, I'm taping this introduction a little bit early because I'm packing my bags tonight. I'm heading off to the Toronto Film Festival. This is going to be, I think, my 7th or 8th visit to the Toronto Film Festival, which... I'm not sure. People always ask me which of the festivals is my favorite. They all kind of have their seductive points. And Toronto's is, I think, that pound for pound, the films are just better. It's kind of a launching pad for the Oscar season, and invariably you see better films. I've actually already seen a bunch of films. They've been screening a bunch for me and others here in New York. So literally the last 24 hours, I've seen 3 films, all of which were excellent and all of which will be in the Oscar hunt. So it's exciting to see sort of that turn from summer movies, which, you know, there's good and bad and ugly, to, you know, the fall films, which invariably has some more quality to them. So I'm really excited for Toronto, not to mention the fact that I'm going to sit down with a ton of great people. Some of it, by the time you listen to this, you're going to probably see some of the conversations on MTV's YouTube page and on MTV.com. But, you know, I'm talking to the cast of Black Mass and Sicario and Freeheld, actors like, Sicario has Emily Blunt and Benicio Del Toro and Josh Brolin. I'm talking to Kristen Stewart for, it seems like, the 15th time in 3 months about her new film Equals. Nicholas Holt's also in that one, talking to him, catching up with Tom Hiddleston, who has 2 films at the festival, Jessica Chastain and Matt Damon and company from The Martian. Too many films to count. We're covering them all for MTV, and I'm talking to them all for MTV.com. So check out all the content there. And keep listening to Happy, Sad, Confused. If you have any suggestions on folks you want to hear on the show, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at Joshua Horowitz. Send me your questions. Next week, I'll get back to the question and answer game and answer some of your probing questions for me. And in the meantime, I'll toss it over to this lovely chat with the brilliant young actor that is Mr. Andrew Garfield. Enjoy.
Get the phlegm out. We're just doing, Andrew and I are doing our vocal exercises.
That's right.
Anything?
Do you ever do anything like that?
No. Should I? Do you?
No, I should. For this stuff, I should.
What about like when you were doing theater?
Yeah, theater. But
what did
why
it sound
not for
like?
This stuff? It should be for this stuff.
I want a preview. What does it sound like? Hopefully, we're rolling on this.
You're just trying to open up your throat. You sometimes gargle with like the shower water in the mornings right. and sing with them. Anyway.
Well, luckily we have shower water. We're going to bring in.
Throw it on. Yeah. Anchorman. What did he do in Anchorman? Those were the best.
Oh, the only thing I think of is the hands. This is the hands. Luckily, you don't have to hold a microphone for this.
So good.
It's good to see you, man. It's been
it's
too
really
long.
It's nice to see you as well.
As I was saying, I'm a big, big fan of this film. I'm excited to talk to both you and Michael in a bit about this. First, let's get the important stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
The hair. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I know.
This is a national obsession. I'm getting out of the way so we can move on to more important things.
you've tightened it down.
Act like you're actually interested.
You're hiding it from me.
This
Why?
Is like a boss question that he's like, you got to ask about the hair.
You know what the sad thing is? It's not.
Oh, no, even worse. It's a legitimate...
Well, I am fascinated by the man bun. Who isn't?
Fascination and man bun shouldn't be in the same sentence. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. And I
hair generally or just...
No, hair is hair and it's fine. I don't have anything against hair specifically, but it's more the furor that surrounds it. No, I mean, yes, of course it's stupid. But I had to grow my hair out for a film that I did recently and I haven't cut it because I'm scared because I will need to make sure I don't do anything because with the next film I do, I have to have a certain haircut, so I can't... Just stop pressuring me.
Yeah, suddenly you're sweating. I've never seen you. I've asked you tough questions over the years, and this is the one where you break down.
It's awful. And also, I think there's something... Because I have a mustache right now as well.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
And, you know, I don't think they look good on me, these things. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I like keeping them, because we're in a culture right now which is... You know, everyone's just like, you know, everyone has an opinion. And I know that people don't like how I look. And I think that
you're hoping maybe a few paparazzi fall off.
That's right, yeah. It's like a repellent. No, I kind of, there's a little bit of me that's like, well, fuck it. I'll look like this. And I had a big beard last year as well. Yeah, and people were like, what the fuck is that beard?
You had the last man on earth beard.
Yeah, right. That's how I was feeling inside. Yeah. Anyway, so I think it may just be a little bit of like a, oh, you don't like it? Good.
So to clarify, the last couple of days when I saw it out and about, you're not doing a Harry
when
Styles.
When it was out and about.
You're not doing the Harry Styles biopic. This is not.
I'm petitioning.
Yeah, you're going
I'm campaigning.
You're secreting.
Subliminally, just like, is his life full and rich enough to have a biopic done about it yet?
I think it's time.
It's time. He's what, 21?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's.
But I can't think of a bigger 1D fan than you. So why
no,
not?
That's right. You got me.
So we've spoken a lot over the years about the Spider-Man franchise, but it's interesting to note that since doing those two films, as far as I can tell, you've done basically three projects. You've worked with Martin Scorsese, did Death of a Salesman on Broadway, and this 99 Homes, which speaks pretty well of what is in the script and the filmmaker behind this one, that it's of the caliber that makes you want to jump on board.
Yeah.
Give me a sense of where you were at when this one emerged and why 99 Homes was the thing to do.
I was doing the second Spider-Man film and, you know, reading a lot of stuff, really good stuff, that have turned into great films that other actors did. But, you know, it's like a friend of mine who happens to be a Jesuit priest here in the city says, just not the good that you were called to, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like there are certain songs that come on the radio that may be great songs, but it doesn't make me want to dance, you know?
Right.
And there are certain songs that could be really bad songs that just make me want to... Anyway, so I read a lot of things and nothing would just kind of hit, you know, that bell inside. And I got to page 30, I think, of 99 Homes. Even just hearing about what the film was about and Ramin told me what it was about. He actually thought of me when he saw Death of a Salesman because I think there's some correspondence between the themes in this film and the themes that Arthur Miller was wrestling with as well. And I think Ramin has that kind of lofty ambition of creating very American stories, very reflective of the time and place we're in as a country and as a culture and society. So I read it, and I got to page 30, and it just was just the bell was ringing inside. And page 30 is the end of the Nash family eviction. And there was
it's
something
heartbreaking.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but for me, there's something so like viscerally relatable. Even though I've never been evicted, and I've never, right. you know, but I know what. I somehow knew what that experience was, and it shook me to my core. And I thought, well, this is. It's rare that you get to read a film script that's about something.
And it's fascinating that, like, I mean, I was just trying to describe it to the guys here about, like, literally what the film is about. And
yeah.
like, you know, the shorthand is what it's kind of like a drama thriller set against the housing crisis. But it's like, that doesn't do it justice. And the way that this has become a very it's a very personal story, a very
yeah.
human story.
Yeah.
And it also operates, frankly, as like a riveting, like, edge of your seat thriller.
Oh, good.
Which is a hell of an accomplishment.
Oh, cool.
I mean, talk to me a little bit about, I mean, I heard Ramin is the filmmaker,
Ramin,
right?
Yeah.
I heard him talk a little bit about, like, using some non-actors in the course
yeah,
of this. Was
yeah.
that something that, again, was sort of part of the package that made this worth doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Me and Ramin share, like, one of our favorite filmmakers is Ken Loach.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a fan of his since, as far as I can remember, and the reality that he creates, you know, and one of the first films I did was a film called Boyer, which with Peter Mullen, who did My Name Is Joe with Ken Loach. And it's these dream stories that he told me about how he works, where the boom operator will be hidden in a bush, and the camera—you won't even know that there's a camera rolling—but then stuff just happens and you respond.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as film work goes, you can afford that kind of level of spontaneity and presence. And as an actor in film, you're always trying to trick yourself into the moment. You're
right.
trying to get all the crap out of the way, and whether you look good or whether you're gonna be good or whether you have anything to offer or not, just to be present.
Right.
So anything that helps that is really exciting. And I, you know, that was really early discussions that Ramin and I had about how we wanted to work. And I didn't want to know who was going to be on the other side of the door on any day where I was going to be knocking on a door. I didn't want to know if there was going to be anyone there. I just wanted to know what my job was for that day, whether it was an eviction, a cash for keys, or a strippogram, you know.
That didn't make the cut of the film.
I didn't make
the
cut. It would have been a bit of a detour.
Magic Mike crossover.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, no, that was so rewarding. And, you know, and the non-actors that we got to play with, so many of them were going through the very thing or had some experience with the very thing that the film was dealing with. And it just adds this kind of weight and this yeah. energy to what we were doing. And it's when, you know, a film starts to transcend itself and starts to go, oh, we're now in the world, and
yeah.
that's where art is supposed to be. It's supposed to be in the world.
Can you set up a little bit about the arc of this character? Because this guy definitely goes on a journey in terms of where we see him in that first act through his relationship with Michael Shannon's character and sort of where that develops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he starts out as just a good boy, really. He's trying to do right by his family, and he's trying to make an honest living, you know, like so many Americans are doing,
right.
trying to do. And he happens to be one of the Americans that doesn't have the opportunity to. For all the social economic reasons that so many Americans experience this very thing. And he's basically put into a situation where he loses everything and he feels like a total failure as a provider, as a man. And then he's given an opportunity to provide, but the only way he's able to do that is if he compromises his soul, if he compromises his integrity and his ethic.
Yeah.
And what he knows in his heart to be a good life. He has to sacrifice that in order to provide, which is what the system is enforcing upon him. And from there, you know, there's this kind of downward slope but upward as well, in one way. Like, the soul is going down,
yes.
but, like, his worldly success is going up. And
yeah.
I don't think that's an unfamiliar territory for any of us. I can speak for myself, like,
how many compromises are we going to make?
How many compromises,
yeah.
And what does it take to make it? What does it take to be liked? What does it take to be accepted? To
yeah.
be not rejected by your family, not rejected by a friend, not rejected by a work colleague or by a boss?
Right.
How much do you have to swallow in order to get through the day? And I keep thinking the corresponding thing for me in my experience, especially in recent years, is paparazzi. And I speak to a lot of paparazzi when I get a chance to. When there's few of them enough where I can actually connect.
Yeah, sure.
And after the usual defensiveness on both sides, we get to a place of real deep conversation. They're like, I don't want to be doing that. I don't want to be doing this. I hate that I have to do this, but it's hard out here, and I have no other way of surviving, and I don't ever want to take a picture ever again, and, you know, all this stuff. And I believe it sincerely.
Yeah.
I do believe underneath that they don't want to be hated. No one wants to be hated.
Right.
Anyway, So if nothing else, it gives me compassion for, you know, people who are forced into a job that doesn't actually fulfill them and doesn't feel like it's of them. Sure. I think a great deal of the population can identify with that, not being given the opportunity to give their gifts to the world in a way that is authentic to who they are.
Yeah.
And actually, in fact, being forced into a job and a profession that costs so much to the soul and feels like they're sacrificing something deeper in order to survive. And that's, I mean, understandable and tragic to me.
And once you're in it for a week, a month, 6 years, 10 years of your life, it's like, how do you extricate yourself from that situation? It's almost impossible for many people.
It takes a tidal wave of transformation and terror, you know.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Jumping off a cliff.
To change.
So it also deals a lot with, we were talking about that heartbreaking scene of being evicted from your character's home early in the film, and the notion of home and how important that is to all of us. I'm curious, since we have some time to talk sort of in a larger framework of your career, what was your childhood bedroom like? What was your childhood like as a kid?
Cool.
What did it look like?
Well, it evolved a lot. You know, of course. Do you mean childhood as in preteen or teenage?
Whatever you want. What's your most vivid recollection of your bedroom?
I remember when I first got my own room away from, when I was the Connor's age, my son in the film, Noah's age, like 11, 10, 11, and I finally got my own room away from my brother's room. And I wanted to put the bed underneath this little corner desk so that it felt like a fort.
Sure.
It felt like a cave.
Yeah.
And I could, like, hide all of the naked pictures of girls and underneath the skateboard magazine, pullouts in the surfing magazine pictures, and just stickers everywhere, like bands like Rage Against the Machine and, you know, Green Day and Nirvana and Pearl Jam and lots of like hip hop, like The Far Side and N.W.A.
Now we're moving into your current room, wherever your current bedroom is.
Oh, my current room.
Tell me what it looks like. It's preserved.
Yeah.
Sort of a monument. Right?
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. What do you mean, my current room?
And what about film wise? What were the first obsessions on that side?
On my first obsessions, well, it was all VHS usually. Copied from the cable TV or whatever. Oh, well, you know, Michael J. Fox movies, Teen Wolf, and Back to the Future, and Doc Hollywood, and Secret of My Success, and then early Tom Hanks films like Big and Splash, Dragnet with Dan Aykroyd, and, you know, Ghostbusters, and. Yeah, and Bill and Ted, and then I got obsessed with Any Given Sunday.
That's not a waiver. Albert Stone gets
but
in
that
there.
Was a poster that I had. Okay. Strangely, I had the Any Given Sunday poster. I don't know why. I still love that movie. If it's ever on, I'll just watch.
Any movie where Al Pacino screams for a good 20 minutes is a good movie.
I absolutely loved it, and I still do. I stand by that choice.
Well, you went off with a couple of that. I think inevitably, I'm a little bit older than you, but I remember like a day.
How old are you?
I'm 39.
Oh, you are?
I came back from a summer camp one year, and I saw a triple feature. After summer camp, I would go with my older brother, to see a bunch of movies. And I saw a triple feature of Back to the Future, Teen Wolf, and Real Genius in one day. And, like, my life has been downhill.
That's it.
I mean, what's left to do?
Where do you go?
Where do you go, Andrew?
That's it. No, that's it. And you're trying to recreate it every day from now on. I totally, that's an amazing, wow. That's a great day.
What it was. Star Wars, big Star Wars fan?
I am a Star Wars fan, but it wasn't as big in my imagination as Indiana Jones and Back to the Future, to be honest. Yeah. I love it. So I'm really excited. And obviously, I just worked with Adam.
I was going to say, where was that in the sequence? Had he already shot?
He'd shot it, yeah. He didn't tell me nothing.
No,
he was really on it, man. But what an actor! And I think
bring something different each time a little bit.
Totally. I just saw While We're Young.
Great.
And he's so good. He's so good.
Yeah.
Today's sponsor of Happy Sad Confused is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/happy using the code HAPPY. Listen, you guys probably spend at least a third of your life sleeping if you're like me. So let's make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two comfy technologies for better nights and brighter days, latex foam and memory foam. So they've got just the right sink and just the right bounce no matter how you sleep. Plus, they've got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you. You can try it for 100 days, and if you're not happy, they'll pick it back up. At the store, maybe you get a minute to try a mattress. With Casper, you actually get to sleep on it. It's only $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king. Compare that to industry averages, and it's an outstanding price point, guys. So get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/happy and use the code HAPPY. Terms and conditions apply.
When you look back, I mean, if I had to guess, or an easy guess about like the turning point of a career, whether it's a meeting or audition, is Social Network, is it that, or is it the Spider-Man gig or whatever? When you think back, do you think back to like one kind of shift where like it kicked into another gear or your mindset changed in terms of what your career was becoming?
I think it depends what you mean by a turning point in a career, because I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that, to be honest. I feel, whenever I think about that question, I just feel so grateful because I start to think about how lucky I am that I get to do this at all.
Yeah.
You know, that I get to do what I love for a living is insane. Let alone, you know, with the Spider-Man thing, play someone that I wanted to be since I was 3 years old. It's like, how do you earn that?
Yeah.
You're never going to really feel like you've earned that. Even though I obviously work really hard, but I'm never going to feel comfortable with the opportunity I've been given.
Was, for instance, going back further, was like Doctor Who a big moment at the time?
To be honest, no.
Okay, because I'm always intimidated by it because I've never watched it because there are so many. Where do you begin?
I know. I have respect for it. I have so much respect
Absolutely.
For it. And it's like, I think like people are obsessed with it in the same way that I'm obsessed with Back to the Future or Indiana Jones and or anything to do with Michael J. Fox. Like I totally understand that. It's like got this incredibly deep following. But for me, it was like in that moment, I knew that it was like a big deal to be a part of this kind of like heritage. So I did feel a sense of pride.
Right.
But to be honest, it was never my big fanboy kind of thing.
Yeah. I think the first time I saw you in a film, and I didn't realize who I was looking at the time and the amount of wonderful times we'd have together back then, was Lions for Lambs.
Lions for Lambs.
Yeah. Which is amazing to think. Like, I mean, it's a film that slipped by a lot of people.
It did,
But Robert Redford directed. You basically, as I recall, it's just a lot of FaceTime. You sit down with Robert kind of lecturing each other. What do you think back to when you think of that?
That was great. I mean, what a trip. That was my first movie. That was the first time I ever did a movie.
Yeah.
And it was him, with him, and again, on a script and a subject that felt so cool and vital to me, and I was so excited to be a part of. And yeah, it did slip by people, but I don't know. Have another look at it, because I think Meryl's in it, TC's in it.
Is that what you call it? Tom Cruise?
TC?
Do you just text him, hey, TC, what's up?
I don't have his number. but no, Tommy.
Tommy, that's what he
Tommy Cruiser.
Cruiserlicious?
Cruiser liar. I mean, again, he's such a, I'm really excited that he had such a great success recently with the Mission Impossible thing.
It's
no, I hear it's incredible. I saw recently Edge of Tomorrow.
Amazing.
And he's just, he is
Yeah.
Tom, he is. We need him.
We do.
He's such a movie star. He's so brilliant.
A movie star in the best possible.
Yeah, he's so uncynical. He's just like, yeah. and I've had very few interactions with him, but I actually really think he's a really decent guy, a really good guy.
Absolutely. I've never seen a guy literally, I mean, it's a small thing, but I would say, like, if you've ever, on my side of things, worked a red carpet, Tom gets there first.
He's so generous. He's such a generous presence. Anyway.
You talked about kind of like the goal of many roles or trying to kind of break it down where it's authentic, it feels real, and there's no sense of falseness to it. I would think that's part of what Fincher's going for, where it's kind of breaking you down a little bit with all those takes.
Totally.
And did you feel like you got to that place where you were like, okay, I'm worn down on take 45 and I have to be just raw and instinctual? And
Again, but it's without, that's what he's going for, right. Just like taking, like, you're not even thinking about being authentic anymore. You're just like, fuck you.
Just want to get out of here.
Just like, and then you suddenly do something that is just weird and real.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I would work like that forever. And also I'm a workaholic in the sense that I never feel like I'm ever giving enough or I'm never given enough. So with Fincher is the only time doing theatre is the only time that I've ever felt satisfied at the end of every night, where you kind of go, okay, I am just going to sleep because I can't, I know I gave all I have to give.
That's a good feeling.
It's a wonderful feeling. And it's frustrating and it's angering, but really it's just beautiful. I really like it.
When you look back on, and I got a chance to see you and Philip Seymour Hoffman and a great cast and the Salesman. When you look back on that experience, I mean, it must be colored by the fact that we've lost Phil and Mike Nichols in the last couple of years, which is crazy. Does it change sort of the recollection of that experience now?
Or I mean, obviously it was always going to be this mighty remembrance, no matter, you know, just unto itself, that play in New York with those people, Linda, Finn, Phil, Mike. I can't even, you know. It's one of those ones that may not be suitable for television.
Well, let's talk a little bit less weighty, but still weighty, the Spider-Man experience, which you've talked a lot about recently.
Right.
I mean, I'm curious in a couple of respects. So, like, when you shot your last day on the second film, did you have any sense that might be it?
I'm trying to remember what the last day was.
I mean, I guess I'm asking, like, what was your sense of confidence going out of that film was about the franchise?
You never know, do you? And I don't think I knew. I never... I always think the last job is going to be my last job ever anyway.
I'm going to break down the film industry all by myself and my own career.
So, obviously I feel a lot about that 5 years and that character and the whole experience. It's not one thing. It's so many different things.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, can you pinpoint a time where you felt it was... I mean, there's a lot to be proud of. Let's get that out of the way first, because I feel like a lot of those two films has been clouded now in...
I don't know why that is, because I agree with you. I think there is a lot of really, really good stuff in there. I know there's a lot of heart in there. Yeah. I know there's a lot of... I'm really proud of a lot of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a time you can pinpoint where you felt it was starting to drag in a direction that you weren't satisfied with? Or is it hard to pinpoint a specific moment?
It's hard to get into that in an intimate, honest way, because I don't know if there's any need to go into that in a public way. You know, I will say I'm so grateful. I'm like this, and this is a little bit of a cop out, but I am really grateful.
It's okay,
I am totally grateful for those experiences and for all the people that I got to collaborate with and meet and spend time with and be in battle with. You know when something is feeling in your bones like it's... You know when something feels right.
Yeah.
And you also know when something is feeling like... Is scaring.
Yeah.
Is, you know, and I like to be scared, but in a good way. You know, I like to feel challenged, and you know.
Well, that's okay. I get it. I mean, looking ahead just now as a fan, and you get to be a fan.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at all that they didn't go in the Miles Morales direction? A lot of people were saying that.
Unfortunately, I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. First of all, Tom Holland.
Amazing actor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that has to be said first, and I think they've made a really, really smart choice in choosing that actor, and I think he's going to have a ball, like it seems that all those actors have in the Marvel films. It just looks like they're all having fun together, and I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Spielberg said the other day that, and I feel like, you know, he's a pretty wise man in the film industry. He's saying the superhero genre, it could go the way of the Western, where it's cyclical, right?
Right.
It'll last, it'll go away, it'll come back.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I think he's probably right. I think it'll last. I don't think it's going away this year or 5 years from now.
Right.
But
I think in a storytelling, from a storytelling perspective, my perspective on them has shifted a lot because, you know, of course, I just went in going, Spider-Man, my favorite guy, I'm just going to be Spider-Man, I'm going to save the world. And then I see, of course, you get older and you start to consider, well, what would I show my kids? What would I lead my kids toward?
Yeah.
There may be something dangerous about the one man coming and saving humanity.
Right.
It kind of abdicates the rest of us of responsibility. And actually, you know, we have had great figures in the history of time.
Right.
You know, I think about Gandhi and John Lennon and Martin Luther King,
sure,
and whoever you want to name. These great progressive movements.
But they're movements.
Yeah. And it just happens to be one person who's the face. But behind that person is a community,
right,
and everyone bringing their gifts into the community. So this idea that the world is going to be saved by one man, by one woman, is a fallacy, evidently. So I'm a little concerned, maybe. I'm starting to think about that, and I'm starting to think about, well, what's really going to change the world?
Right.
It's if all of us are living our destiny. It's if all of us, it's if the paparazzi guys put the cameras down and go and do the fine art degree that they thought they were always supposed to do, or you know, the guy who's doing insurance picks up his stand-up routine and goes and does it in front of whatever. It's like,
sure,
you know, that's what's going to change the world.
Well, even your last Spider-Man film kind of ended on that note of inspiration, of inspiring that little kid.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That was one of my favorite parts of the film, and just for my own ego gratification, was my idea. It was that storyline was something that I really felt. I was like, this film is missing me as a 7-year-old. This is missing all of us as a 7-year-old being inspired and being given the strength, the idea to be who we are. We can be who we are, all of us. And we can step into fear and be courageous in our own lives. So I'm really glad you mentioned that, and I feel a little bit egotistical mentioning that it was my idea.
No.
But that's one of the things I'm really proud of in that, because that track feels really good to me.
One of the next times we'll probably talk is, I assume, next year's Silence.
Yeah.
At this point, mm-hmm. He's not sneaking this in at the end of this year, as far as we know.
No. Okay. He's not ready. He won't be ready.
Take a little time.
Yeah, I think
room.
So. Yeah.
So Martin Scorsese, Silence. Mm-hmm. This is a film that we've heard about for many years with different casts, and you've got a chance to. This is a huge opportunity that must have felt weighty before getting into it, and then when you're in it, you have to be in it. Did it live up to whatever high expectations you had put on it?
Beyond, exceeded any idea of what I thought it would be. Partly due to the material and being able to swim around in material like that and themes so rich and deep. And of course, him as a film, and Martin Scorsese as a film. I can't say Marty.
You can say Marty.
No, I can't.
Nobody calls him Marty.
No, can't.
You call him TC, Tom Cruise Delicious. You call Martin Scorsese Marty. Did you come away with that from, I mean, you clearly are an appreciator of film as it is, but mm-hmm. this is a notorious walking, talking encyclopedia. Did he turn you on to...
Yes.
Filmmakers and films.
Oh yeah, no, he gave me boxes of. He actually helped me in research with 99 Homes. I actually was able to email him and say, "So this is a story about that. It's kind of a deal with the devil kind of story. It's kind of a man losing his own soul in order to, you know, blah 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 blah. Do you have any ideas for movies to watch?" And he was just like, "Yeah." I'll send him out to
Wikipedia. He doesn't need Google.
He had like all these burned like copies of like the weirdest and what most wonderful kind of, yeah, just incredible. He's just lived a good life, hasn't he?
Oh my God.
He's lived a good life, and he's now an elder of the community in the way that he's mentoring in a constant way.
Yeah.
He's mentoring young filmmakers and actors and whatnot, and he's really figured out it's about giving. He's really figured that out. Mike was the exact same. Nichols was the exact same way. The good ones figure out it's about what can I leave you with that is gonna help you, and then what can then you leave with the next guy, and then you and the next guy.
Yeah. Well, it's so inspiring too, to see this enthusiasm and energy from this guy who's over 70.
Yeah.
I mean, in the last couple of years we've had, I don't know if you've seen Mad Max either, but like George Miller at 70, redefining action, and
Martin
Scorsese was killing it with Wall Street, which felt like a 25-year-old.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, and he is that on set. He's so against aging. He's going the opposite way.
Yeah.
He's saying no.
When you came in today, we were talking your next gig in a couple days. You're off to work with Mel Gibson and a hell of a cast on, by the way, a hell of a name for a film, Hacksaw Ridge. I'm already frightened. Jesus. Is that your name? I want your name to be Hacksaw Ridge. The next great action hero. Adjust it to Mel. You don't have to take credit for it.
Well, it's based on this guy, true story about this guy called Desmond Doss, but maybe we could rename him Hacksaw Ridge for the purposes
Desmond
of Hollywood.
Or Hacksaw Ridge?
Yeah, it's Hollywood. It's like, they expect it. It's fine.
Did it take, though, a little reconciling? Mel is, without a doubt, an amazing talent. I'm a huge fan of his. He's had his troubles, as many have.
Yes. We all have our troubles.
I mean, do you have to reconcile that, get that out of the way, and figure out, like, I need to talk to this guy and figure out what he's about?
Not really. I, to be honest, I don't pay much attention to the gossipy kind of personal lives of people. And if I needed to in certain cases, I would. In this case, it didn't feel... Well, here's the thing. I first of all met... We met, and I really just liked him. And I... Before that, I'd just been a fan of his work as an actor and as a filmmaker. So it was kind of simple. The story is beautiful, and he wants to tell it in a way that is honoring of this man. And, you know, I have no comment. I really don't have any comment on someone's personal life in that way. And, of course, if I couldn't reconcile anything, I wouldn't go to work.
Sure.
But yeah, I feel like really excited, to be honest.
So you're literally about to start work on this one. I'm curious, when are you at your most unpleasant to be around? Is it before movie starts, during the movie, or in post-movie?
I think there's a couple of people in the room that could probably answer.
We'll bring them in a second. But I want to hear from you.
Is it just a constant? It's probably a constant.
A flat line of misery.
My friend Rufus falling down his chair. Probably, what feels most unpleasant to me, I don't know if it's unpleasant for everyone else, is about a couple of weeks after, where I just hit a real low.
Is it just like, I have nothing to do, I spent all my energy?
If I don't have anything lined up, I'll go into this kind of purposeless wasteland.
How you're walking with your arms stretched out?
Reaching for
on the
things.
Street? What is he doing?
I'll feel like I'm like floating in oblivion.
Right.
And all the adrenaline will have left my body, and I would have stopped patting myself on the back for working so hard. And it would have been, you know, 2 weeks after a project, and I'll be like, who am I? What am I doing? What did I just do? It's all meaningless. And then you just kind of... It's hard, man. I don't know about you, but I can't go to work unless it's... I have to, you know? And unless it's totally personal and full of purpose and meaning. And as we know, those films are hardly made, you know? And then you're reliant on there being a part in them for you. And then you're reliant on the director thinking you're right for that
right.
part. And then you're reliant on the dates being...
Yeah.
So I don't often... I don't really get... I'm always ready to work, and I So I'm in process of trying to figure out what happens when I'm waiting, and in terms of to transform that into not waiting, but for.
Do you pour it into anything dumb and stupid, like in terms of I'm gonna binge watch, I'm gonna play video games, I'm gonna be in fantasy football, I'm gonna get, is it any outlet like that you have?
I don't have. It's not like not dumb and stupid, but more like I have lots of different things I love to do, but the dumb and stupid stuff. I do the dumb and stupid stuff while I'm working to offset the intensity of whatever it is we're doing. I like to feel I have a purpose in the world.
So what's some of the dumb and stupid stuff while you're working?
What is some of the dumb and stupid stuff while I'm working? Candy Crush is the main thing, probably.
Really?
Well, because it's just, it occupies me.
It's so colorful.
Yeah, and it's so soothing, especially if you're in the middle of 1600 Japan and God isn't responding.
Right.
Okay, if you have Candy Crush.
Marty, check this out. You got to try this. Get it on your phone.
Yeah, and, you know, I love watching comedy films and comedy TV. I just started watching them on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, it's so good.
Which is really, really good.
Has the theme song gotten in your brain yet?
Well, that song is based upon.
Oh,
the original
that famous
is my
viral video of you all doing this.
Well, that's my
that's your jam.
That's my theme song. Yeah, it's my theme song. They stole it. So I'm watching that, and but that's not stupid and dumb. That's
no,
brilliant.
It's not.
That's like
absolutely.
I need it. I need it in my life.
Speaking of stupid and dumb, let's play a quick stupid and dumb game. I played this with a bunch of people. It's called This or That. Very simple. Just this or that. I'm gonna give you a couple things to choose from.
I feel like you're lulling me into a false sense
no.
of security.
That's what this whole interview was.
It's not as far. It's just
it's so easy. You can't screw this up.
Okay, let's roll now.
This is what we came for, guys. This is the US-UK version, since you have dual citizenship.
I do.
Okay, so you tell me what you prefer.
Oh, no. So someone's going to be angry at me?
Yeah, that's the idea.
America or England?
Yeah. I want you to get kicked
so
out
mean.
Of both countries. That's the idea of this.
Messed up, man.
James Bond or Jason Bourne?
James Bond.
I mean, there's more history there. It's a little.
I don't have to justify it. It's just James Bond. But Paul Greengrass. I love Paul Greengrass. He's English.
Yeah.
Shit.
Jason Statham or Vin Diesel?
Vin Diesel. Sorry.
What do you want to know, Vin? What's your jam? That voice, it's the whole package.
Well,
right?
You know what? I saw, what's the film that I saw just recently for the first time? No, I haven't seen any of those films, but I saw Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He's really pretty good in that film. I love Vin Diesel. And he doesn't take himself seriously. He messes around a lot with the whole Dungeons and Dragons stuff.
That's serious to him. Don't make fun of his Dungeons and Dragons.
No, but what I mean is that I love you, Vin.
Ricky Gervais or Amy Schumer?
Ricky Gervais. The English Office is so seminal and so... you can't... I don't know if anyone's ever going to do it better. I love what Amy Schumer is doing as well, though.
Adele or Miley Cyrus?
Adele.
Okay. Harry Potter or Hunger Games?
They both win!
let's go old school for a second. Spice Girls or NSYNC?
Ooh, Emma Stone will be angry at me, but Justin Timberlake won't be. NSYNC. I used to love NSYNC, genuinely. I used to practice their dances and do the puppet thing. And Justin, the weird thing about Justin, I love him so much. I love what he does so much. I think he is one of the greatest entertainers alive and performers, and I've admired him so much ever since the NSYNC days. I think he's so brilliant.
Food category, scone or bagel?
Scone.
Really?
Of course, with the cream and the jam.
Yeah, well, you can put stuff on bagels too, dude.
You want to put cream on a bagel?
No, I've got cream cheese, though.
Yeah, I know.
Smoked salmon. Oh, it's delicious.
I know. I gavult. Fish.
Cadbury or Hershey's?
Cadbury. I mean, everyone knows that.
Well, you're aggressive all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, because even Americans.
I feel like you almost hit me
just now. You're so sensitive.
Came out. And I think I know, based on our earlier conversation, but Doctor Who versus Star Trek.
Huh. I was never a Trekkie or a Whovian. Is that what they call them?
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm going to go for Doctor Who.
Okay.
You Doctor Who people like me now, and everyone Star Trek people will dislike me. Can't win them all.
No, you can't. But you did in this film. What a segue. No, honestly, I love this film. I truly do. You and Michael kill it. Everybody does in this one. I hope people check it out. 99 Homes is
99
the
movie. Homes.
And we'll talk again soon, hopefully.
I'm sure we will.
With Mr. Mel Gibson and company.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for stopping by.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Thanks, boy.
Nice to see you. Thank you.
Merry Christmas! Blech. I'm Ho-Ho, the naughty elf, and I know it's not Christmas, so I don't give a shit. I live at the North Pole where I have to make duck toys for shitty kids, and it makes me wish I could kill myself, but I'm immortal! See you forever. The only thing that keeps me going is my favorite podcast with special guest Lauren Lapkus. Oh, it's so good. I love it. I want to marry it. Every week's like a whole new show where a different comedian is the host and Lauren is the guest. It makes me so excited I want to kill a cat and skin its bones and eat them for dinner. Yum. Anyways, listen to this clip.
Your gaze is so
okay,
judgmental.
No. Inside, you have a perfect body. You just don't take care of it. If we could just carve you out of there, we'd have a perfect statue. But you down those flaming hot Cheetos and
so
don't.
Good.
They're disgusting.
So good.
You talk about my tan hands. Well, you have red fingers.
That's the sign of a true snacker.
Did you like that? Did ya? You better like it, or this year Santa's coming down your chimney and dumping coal over your dumbass house. I can make him do that. Check out with special guest Lauren Lapkus today at earwolf.com on Howl or your favorite podcast app, you dumb little butthole. Ho ho!
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Pop. Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.